hard-hitting medical truth, cutting through conflict and confusion to the understanding you're searching for. Join Dr. Peter McCullough, world-renowned medical expert and practicing physician, for this edition of the McCullough Report. Your life may depend on it.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, you're listening to the McCullough Report, and this is Dr. Peter McCullough. I have a very interesting show for you today, and I want to introduce the four speakers that we have for today's show that I'm going to interview. First is Dr. Sabine Hazen, and she is going to inform you about the microbiome, that is, all the different bacteria and organisms that live in your gut, and how the microbiome probably dictates who is going to be resistant to developing COVID-19, in which patients actually are susceptible. Believe it or not, your body carries an entire wealth of other organisms, and they are calling the shots with respect to COVID-19 and the viral infection in many of us. After that, I'm going to introduce to you a real American hero, Dr. Ben Marble. Ben is the organizer and founder of MyFreeDoctor.com. This is a free nationwide medical service that provides telemedicine consulting services for patients who are sick with COVID-19 in order to get them the needed medications and help them avoid hospitalization and death. And Ben is a superstar. He's also a superstar in the information technology in licensing in order to make this happen, a terrific American hero in a time where our agencies, the NIH, CDC, FDA, Infectious Disease Society of America, AMA, American College of Physicians, major academic medical centers, are batting a zero in terms of anything to help patients with acute COVID-19 at home. It is shocking to think that with all the firepower we have in America, not a single one of our iconic institutions have lifted a finger to help a single patient avoid hospitalization and death. Well, Ben Marble went out there and he did it. MyFreeDoctor.com, and he'll introduce that to you. After that, I have to Dr. Craig Wax, who is a media personality himself. He has his own radio show on the East Coast. And Dr. Craig Wax will go over this thorny issue of colleges and universities overstepping their bounds with the elective COVID-19 vaccination program, which is investigational, overstepping their bounds with forcing vaccination on college students and threatening them with blocking their return to the college campuses unless they're vaccinated. This giant overreach and breach of all sense of ethics as it applies to this age group, which does not have a favorable benefit-to-risk profile, meaning there are now data suggesting a college student is more likely to die of the vaccination than die of COVID-19. This proposal that more than 80 colleges and universities have put forward, Dr. Wax believes needs to be killed immediately. And he has organized a letter going out from the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons in order to do that. And I think college, university professors and educators listening to this, beware. You are on thin ice and your liability risks are growing every day that you hang out this ill-fated policy for American college students. Lastly, we'll finish with Dr. Peter Breggin. Peter Breggin is a world-famous author. He put together an incredible book called We Are the Prey. And this book he'll introduce to us. He has carefully gone through how the COVID-19 pandemic was premeditated. It was planned. It has been an opportunity that stakeholders have been waiting for to jump on. And through this process, have created a world of misery, harm, death in order to promote mass vaccination. Peter Breggin has all the citations, he has all the data, and he has all the evidence. He's probably the most wanted man in America right now, and he's going to break through, an intrepid scholar and author, and we look forward to him introducing his book. And that'll round out the show for tonight. So strap in, sit back, take notes, and welcome to the McCullough Report. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And it's my great pleasure to invite on the show today Dr. Sabine Hazen. Dr. Hazen received her bachelor's degree from Concordia University and then went to medical school in Canada at Dalhousie University, moved to the United States, and then did her internal medicine residency at the University of Miami, her gastroenterology fellowship at the University of Florida. And she's currently president, CEO, and founder of ProGenobiome in California. And she is considered the world's expert on the microbiome and how COVID-19 could actually influence the GI tract and all those organisms that live in the GI tract. Dr. Hazen, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can we start out by having you explain in lay terms to our audience, what is the microbiome in the GI tract and what does it mean to them?
So the microbiome is really the accumulation of microbes, bacteria, virus, fungus, parasites, even in some people, that live in our gut. So when you look at your, you know, sorry to be so crude, but when you look at your bowel movement, that's essentially all your microbes, right? That's microbes doing their thing. And each microbe is strategically placed in our gut to do something. And so that's basically what the microbiome. The gut, as you know, is our immunity. And so obviously, you know, we have to look at what is the microbiome doing if our gut is our immunity.
Well, how is it that our gut is our immunity? We always think about lymph nodes and we think about antibodies, but what is it about our GI tract and the organisms that live there that actually protect us from invaders?
So the GI tract is really where the immunity, if you remember, you know, underneath the colonic mucosa is your immunoglobulins. And so your first barrier to protect you from viruses, from entering, is really your microbes in the gut. And that's why, you know, your T cells, everything is really underneath that colonic mucosa. So when you have a disruption of those microbes, an imbalance, you know, you've heard of the colonic leakage that they talk about, or leaky gut, right? That's basically, that means microbes just pass and enter into your systemic, into your system underneath the colonic mucosa where your immunity is at and essentially destroys your immunity. So that's the best way for me to explain it in layman's term. I'm sure you're probably better at explaining that, but you know, it is complex. It's not something that's, you know, straightforward. So the best way I like to explain it to patients is when you have a disruption in your gut, in your microbiome, when you have a dysbiosis, an imbalance, that usually is significant for disease. And we are definitely seeing that on a research scale in multiple diseases that we thought were chronic disease. You know, when you think of Alzheimer's, when you think of MS, when you think of autism, when you think of Crohn's disease. So we used to think, well, it's just an intestinal problem, right? But it's really an imbalance in the microbiome that allowed for that imbalance to occur and then the inflammation to occur.
So the bugs live inside of us, and the population of bugs, all the different species, really matter in terms of their proportion. And the listeners may appreciate that when they get a course of antibiotics, sometimes that can disrupt the microbiome and they can get antibiotic-associated diarrhea. They could go to overseas or go to South America and get a traveler's diarrhea where another bug comes in and disrupts all the bugs in the GI tract. What are we learning with respect to COVID-19? People think about nasal stuffiness, shortness of breath, fever. What about GI symptoms?
So there's definitely a core, there's definitely GI symptoms that occurs. And I think up to 40%. I've been on the forefront of research doing these clinical trials. And what we noticed is, you know, so I'm very, very sensitive to asking the questions of, are you having nausea? Are you having diarrhea? And I think when you ask specifically, you notice that it's actually between 40 to 50% of patients have symptoms of digestive problem during COVID. I think that's kind of the first thing that tells you that it has hit the gut. I think when you see patients having diarrhea, you wonder, well, maybe the virus hit the bowels and therefore evacuated quickly and caused the symptom of diarrhea. I think the important thing to also know is the virus sits on ACE2 receptors, which we all know, angiotensin receptors. And where is the biggest body of ACE2 receptors is really in the bowels. So I think, when a virus penetrates and starts sitting on where something else should be sitting, it starts occupying rent, I like to call it. So basically that's what happens. And so we have to be very sensitive to the GI symptoms, but more importantly, we have to understand that if the virus is in the gut, it is already starting to create havoc in those microbes in your bacteria. And that's what we're seeing, by the way, which we're going to be publishing. But essentially we are seeing that the virus goes into your gut. And it could sit there for, we published that we found it up to 45 days, but we just found another patient that, you know, the virus was in their gut for up to 6 months. And the patient was a long hauler. Patient was, had neurological symptoms and they couldn't figure out. They were asymptomatic at the beginning from COVID. And then lo and behold, they started having a neurological problem. The two family members, the two people that were in the family, ended up having COVID and horrible pulmonary symptoms, but this person did not have pulmonary symptoms and 3 months later developed neurological symptoms. When we started looking into the microbiome, which you have to realize this is expensive genetic sequencing because it's a 2-week process to isolate the virus and to look at the strain, we actually noticed that this patient wasn't a neurological problem from neurological, but actually they did have COVID that just was never resolved and was never treated and created a havoc in the bowels. So I think it's important to understand that, yes, it goes in the lungs. Yes, it destroys our airways. But our biggest problem, especially in the long haulers, is in the gut. Because if you start creating the havoc of destroying the bacteria that sustains your immunity, that sustains your life, then eventually, what do? You have a desolate gut. And when you have a desolate gut, you're predisposed to having other viruses. We've certainly seen, you know, CMV colitis was reported. I think you picked up a case on that, if I recall. So CMV colitis is definitely, you know, entered because there was already a co-infection with COVID. We're certainly seeing herpes, herpes simplex. We're seeing JCV virus. Activation. We're seeing Epstein-Barr virus. So, you know, when your gut is out of balance, viruses penetrate because that's what happens. Bacteria is much bigger than a virus. And so therefore, if your microbiome, if your gut is all occupied with a lot of bacteria, a lot of good diversity, a lot of good microbes of different species, then essentially the virus cannot penetrate. It'll just go through you. But if it happens to have an imbalance, a gut that is full of imbalances because whatever reason, then viruses penetrate and they start occupying space that good bacteria was supposed to be occupying.
Well, I think it's important for the listeners to know that there was an important analysis that was published by Kevin Lowe. I'm one of the authors. And what I try to do on the McCullough report is point you to something citable in the literature. And we clearly showed those COVID patients who presented with GI symptoms had a worse prognosis. And it's very consistent with what you've said. Can you just finish by telling us this remarkable family where you discovered that, in fact, a good microbiome could defend a patient from getting COVID-19?
Yeah, so my passion and my strength, and I look for these patients, the patients that are basically, you know, like I did a video with the farmer and Dr. Hazen, and basically it was a farmer who kissed his wife who had COVID, and he didn't want to wait and be in quarantine for 20 days. And he figured he might as well catch it at the same time as her. And this way he's out of it. He's immunized, etc. Anyway, so he took her saliva, he smeared it on his eyes, he kissed her for 10 days, never got COVID. So I was obsessed with this case because I actually analyzed the farmer and his wife. And we're seeing this signature microbiome of strength, if you want, you know, what that allowed him to not be susceptible to COVID. And that's why I kind of, if you look at the microbiome, you notice that the kids have a much stronger microbiome, right? The process of aging is loss of diversity. In other words, you're born with just a couple of microbes that are starting to grow, but you have the spores, the baseline of all these microbes that are growing and taking, you know, space that takes room in your gut. And these kids have a lot of diversity, a lot of good bacteria. And that's how they're raised. And that's why, you know, there's kids in general are much stronger. And then the process of aging, when you look at the nursing home patients, when you look at the older population, they have very, very low good bacteria and very low diversity because they tend to eat the same thing over and over again. They tend to be stressed, the process of aging, our bowels are not working as well, our muscles, everything kind of slows down. Same with the production of microbes slows down, it starts dying. So that's the process of aging, right? So when you see a virus that penetrates and kills the old and with high comorbidity, or the people that have a really bad microbiome, right? Because that's what we're seeing in our studies and we're publishing all this, obviously, you know how slow I am at that. I'm more interested in seeing the data than publishing. But essentially what we're seeing is really, you know, the people that survive COVID had a strong microbiome. And the people that don't survive COVID had a very weak microbiome. So when you hear of an athlete that all of a sudden, you know, had the worst COVID ever, you wonder, well, what is that athlete taking and what is his microbiome look like? And in fact, I had a bunch of 22-year-olds that had severe COVID symptoms, you know, and because we say, well, the kids don't, it doesn't affect it. Well, the majority of kids, 99%, 99.9% of kids are fine and will not be touched. But unfortunately, there are those kids that are damaging, that have a damaged microbiome. You see it in the autistic population where there's an imbalance in the gut microbes. You see it in kids that are healthy and taking garbage probiotics over the counter are actually taking dead bacteria that's doing worse to their guts than anything. And those are the kids that do worse. So I think the importance of looking at the microbiome to better understand this virus is really key, in my opinion.
Well, I'll let that be the last word, Dr. Hazen. That was really remarkable. I learned a lot. The farmer who tried to intentionally get COVID and he couldn't because his microbiome protected him. The generality that the children's microbiome may be, in fact, what protects them against severe COVID. And it makes a lot of sense where a weak microbiome, the defense systems are weak. Sure enough, the nursing home patients are sitting ducks for fatal COVID-19. There's certainly a lot more to learn. You've opened our eyes, and thank you so much for joining us on the McCullough Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You're listening to the McCullough Report. With me today on the show is Dr. Ben Marble. Ben Marble's a family physician. He attended the University of South Alabama for undergraduate, for medical school, as well as for his residency. And he's viewed as a national leader in responding to COVID-19 and innovator in terms of medical therapy for patients who have developed the illness and are desperately trying to stay out of the hospital. Ben has also been a COVID victim himself and a COVID survivor. So join me in welcoming Ben to the show. Dr. Marble, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Tell us a bit about telemedicine, your involvement, myfreedoctor.com, and where we are with respect to this new standard of care for treating patients with COVID-19?
Well, I kind of have to, I guess, go back to a year ago when all this started. You know, of course, I did a lot of reading and research on COVID and the various treatments and all that. And I just started, I realized that, you know, we were free during the crisis to treat people across state lines. So I started getting on telemedicine and just treating people for free in all 50 states. And that snowballed into me eventually creating our telemedicine practice, myfreedoctor.com. And which I think we've delivered 13,000 free doctor consults now. We passed 10,000 on Easter Sunday. And so it's been really exciting. We, you know, there's just people, thousands and thousands of people in need all across America. And we're trying to meet that need to help do what we can to save as many lives as possible by delivering early treatment at home.
How many medicines does it take in order to prescription medicines and supplements, does it take to really take the edge off the virus and help people get through it?
Well, there's one of the big keys about that is starting them early, but there's various medicines, which some of which prescription, some of which are over the counter. There's probably 5 to 10 or so. The prescription ones being hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, of course, those two have been very controversial. The ones that are not so controversial, prednisone, dexamethasone, budesonide, doxycycline, azithromycin. Some of the newer research is showing that colchicine may be of some benefit, fluvoxamine, fenofibrate. So there's a list, a laundry list of older prescription drugs that are being repurposed that are being shown to have some benefit versus COVID. Of course, the over-the-counter supplements, vitamin C, vitamin D3, zinc is really, really important. Quercetin, I never can figure out how to pronounce that correctly. What's the correct pronunciation of that?
I say quercetin. Some people say quercetin.
So. I like quercetin. That sounds a little better. So those really help. And, you know, it's the idea of using... You know, for decades, doctors have treated viruses with drug cocktails, usually a multi-combination, simplest example, HIV. Multiple different drugs you use that help to treat the various problems with that. And we're using a similar approach versus COVID. If you have inflammation issues, use anti-inflammatories. If you have fever, obviously use your, you know, anti-fever medicines, Tylenol, Motrin. There are simple things we can do. Another large part of what we're doing is by getting in touch with people all over America via telemedicine, that sort of avoids the catch-22 of getting exposed at the doctor's office. Maybe you're going to catch COVID just by going to see a doctor. So we kind of, it's a convenience factor where patients are able to avoid that catch-22. So we've really kind of established a new model of treatment delivery on a national level by telemedicine. And a lot of other companies are doing the same thing. So it's really just amazing how telemedicine has taken off in the past year because, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. So we've had to do this. We've been forced to do this to care for our patients.
Do all patients who develop COVID-19, do they all need your form of treatment?
No, you know, many patients have zero symptoms. In fact, I had a nurse I worked with. She was positive and asymptomatic. They never had a single symptom. So I do believe there are a lot of people that get it that are asymptomatic that really have no, you know, it's just a very minor. Some people have zero symptoms. Some people may just have a sniffly nose. Of course, the opposite end of the spectrum is some people wind up dying from it. You know, of course, I myself got it. I know you got it as well. I got very sick from it, wound up in the hospital myself. Part of my problem was I was non-compliant with my own treatment because I thought I had beat it. The first 5 or 6 days of illness, I took it religiously and I was feeling so much better that I, like a fool, I stopped my own protocol for about 3 days because I really thought it was over. And then about day 10 or 11, it just came back with a vengeance and I wound up in the hospital. But luckily I still beat it. And, but it gave me perspective certainly of what it's like to be a COVID patient.
You know. Yeah, I would agree with that. I started treating patients about the same time you did, very early in the pandemic. My several family members were hit in my family with COVID. In my wife's family, we had a death of a younger individual. It really woke us up. And I have never let high-risk patients go without treatment. I'm an internist and cardiologist, and I'm in academic medicine, but, you know, I'm on the inpatient services and clinics at my hospital. And so I've always fell into the same exact treatment pattern that you have, using basically a multi-drug approach, prioritizing patients who present with severe symptoms, and then patients at older age for increased risks of hospitalization and death. And you're right, it can all be done by telemedicine. So the listeners should understand that when they're handed a diagnosis of COVID-19, and most commonly it's an urgent care center, that they need to right away seek treatment through their doctor, or getting a referral from their doctor, or moving right on to the telemedicine services. So Dr. Marble, how do patients actually access your nationwide telemedicine service?
All you have to do is go to myfreedoctor.com, and the instructions, you just basically click through, and then you wind up in our waiting room, and our tech support staff will greet you and start collecting all your information and get you hooked up with one of our physicians. We, as of now, you know, we have 15 physicians active on staff now. We're growing at a very rapid pace. We're handling over 600 patients a day right now. I predict we'll probably be doing 1,000 patients a day sometime by mid-May. And hopefully we just continue to grow because, you know, patients really need to know COVID is not a death sentence. There is early treatment at home. And the more people realize there's early treatment at home, the more people we can save. And the key being starting these meds early. You know, this is the first time in history that the official policy from on high is that you don't treat a patient until they're in the hospital. As physicians, I'm not sure how that makes sense to any doctor to not treat people. You know, this disease has shut down the whole planet, and some people say it's the worst disease ever, but how is it that you're going to send patients home with no prescriptions, not give them really any kind of decent advice, and just no treatment until hospitalization? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'm all in the camp of treating as early as possible. Early treatment's best. Late treatment's better than never, but early treatment is best.
And well, what's happened is two standards have emerged in the United States. There is the leading standard that you have taken, and the group of doctors who are early treating doctors, and now there are many hundreds of them. They are listed in the Association of American Physicians website. They're also listed in the Frontline Critical Care Consortium for COVID. Those two are the two leading organizations. There are now guidance documents written. Dr. Marble is an author on one, as well as mine, published in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine in December of 2020 issue. This is permanently cited in the National Library of Medicine. So this new treatment standard, it's important for Americans and those of you listening worldwide to understand that COVID-19 is treatable. It's partially treatable. No single drug is a cure, but just like with AIDS, the drugs work in combination. Singular drugs could be controversial, just like AZT was controversial in AIDS, but we don't worry about that because we use drugs in combination, about 4 to 6 drugs. Dr. Marble, when patients go to your service and they go through an online consultation, how do they actually physically get the drugs?
Okay, well, after we have, you know, all their info and everything, we decide what we're going to prescribe them. We send it through the e-prescribe platform, which basically means literally in 2 minutes, it goes, you know, over the internet and straight to their pharmacy. So basically, when we're done, we send them discharge instructions, a copy of what they were prescribed, and notify them, go ahead and call your pharmacy. They'll be getting your medications ready.
That's fantastic. Now, the pharmacies can deliver for a charge, or they simply can have a family member who's not affected, not living in the home, pick up the medications and drop them off on the front porch. One of the key things of early treatment is it allows a patient to be completely treated at home. They can do all their contact tracing, and the virus does not spread outside the home. Now, it's common, about 85% of the time, other family members are affected in the home. They also can contact the telemedicine services. This is Dr. Ben Marble at myfreedoctor.com. There are other services available because we recognize that some of the services get overwhelmed, but at 45 to 60,000 cases a day, and potentially 25% of those individuals requiring early treatment, we really have now a network that saved America with early treatment. And we saw towards the end of December, simultaneous reductions in new cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, and that trailed into January. That's given us a long stability period that was long before anybody had received vaccination or any type of immune protection from COVID-19. So early treatment has really saved America from continued suffering, hospitalization, and death from COVID-19. And you've heard today from Dr. Ben Marble that, in fact, his innovation, his working with a team of qualified doctors and with the right scientific approach has really headed us in the right direction in terms of emerging out of this crisis and getting back to normal life. Dr. Marble, any final words for our audience?
Well, I just really want to thank you, Dr. McCullough, for your great leadership throughout this ordeal over the past year. You've been doing an amazing job. And we just got to keep getting the word out across America about myfreedoctor.com so that we can continue to save as many lives as we can and keep getting the message about early treatment at home for COVID, that it is possible and there are good treatments. And all we can do is keep doing what we're doing, keep spreading the word and keep trying to save as many lives as we can.
Very important statements. Thank you so much, Dr. Marble, for joining us on the McCullough Report. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You've been listening to the McCullough Report.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You're listening to the McCullough Report, and this is Dr. Peter McCullough. It's my great pleasure to invite onto the show Dr. Craig Wax. Dr. Wax did his undergraduate work at the Cook College of Rutgers University, went to medical school at the New York College of Osteopathic Medicine, went to the University of New Jersey School of Medicine and Dentistry for his internship, and then went on to the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine for his residency. He's been in practice for many years and really is a leader in family medicine on the East Coast of the United States, both in his patient practice and his tremendous media presence, focusing on health and wellness. He's in Mullica Hill, New Jersey, and his patients are really lucky to have such a superstar physician, Dr. Craig Wax. Dr. Wax, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Thank you, Dr. McCullough. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners today.
We are going to jump right into it. We have a pressing issue with the advent of the COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. mass vaccination program. And Dr. Wax has been a real scholar in COVID-19. He has original publications in this area and particularly been involved in the public health response from a primary care perspective. And now as a public citizen, and I want to turn over the floor to Dr. Wax so he can introduce the most current pressing issue that we're facing with respect to our college students in the United States.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. McCullough. One of the most pressing issues, as you so accurately point out, is the fact that a lot of our population and our children, if you will, are of college age, and they're going to colleges and universities across the country. And a lot of these institutions, both public and private, have decided not only to advocate for them getting the experimental mRNA and DNA vaccines, but to mandate them. And in this population that's generally healthy and is not really affected by the disease of COVID-19 to any major extent, they're forcing this intervention with their mRNA and DNA on them with possible terrible side effects. I mean, if you look at the statistics, young people of this age, young adults, if you will, because anyone that has an 18-year-old out there knows they're an adult and they get to make choices and they get to sign their own checks. It'll be good when they can earn their own checks, but it is what it is. So these folks are being mandated before September to have these experimental non-FDA approved interventions. And again, just to be clear, I am in no means against the grand experiment of these interventions, but from my thought process, they should be in the elderly who are most at risk, people who are in nursing homes, which have proved that they were most at risk, and people with multiple cardiovascular and inflammatory conditions, which are at high risk, not your average person in the population, not people of college age, high school age, even grade school age, let alone pregnant women, which the CDC has just come out in the past week and said they're advocating for. In my practice, I actually know a couple of 31 years old, first pregnancy, 12 weeks out, someone advocated they get the shot. And after 3 days after the second Moderna shot, they had a pregnancy loss. And was it related? Was it not related? You really can't tell. And the college population, you know, when you talk about young women per se, the possibility of pregnancy does exist and can happen in this population. And pregnancy loss would be a huge thing. However, even more disturbing and concerning are all of the menstrual irregularities, which we don't know what they mean. We have seen report after report of these things, and some of them make it to VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, which is the government organization that is supposed to collect all of this data. It's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS. Many of these cases, like the patient I was telling you about, the 31-year-old, when he came across and told me about this, how sad he was and upset, and was it related to the shot? It's impossible to say, but it does need to be reported. It does need to be investigated. And he hadn't reported it. And, you know, after giving him, you know, certainly empathizing with him as we had had a loss in our history, and, you know, talking about this a little and listening, which is a critical skill here, asked him when he could to report it. And so many of these things don't get reported. But as far as the topic goes, college and university students are generally a well population. If they're exposed to COVID and they get what's called SARS-CoV-2, which is the name of the virus which causes COVID, which is easy to transmit. I mean, it transmits through a mask. So masks aren't that useful, unfortunately. I mean, we've heard from the federal government, wear one mask, and that was for a year. And then it was get the vaccine, but you still have to wear the mask. And because that wasn't any good, you got to wear two masks and get the vaccine. And then you still can't take your mother out of the nursing home for lunch on her birthday. So it's really been a public health mess. But when we're talking about this population in colleges and universities, they're well, people have a much higher percentage chance of being killed in an auto accident that they have being in a significant case of COVID, which threatens their health. So having said all of that, the colleges and universities, you know, I'm presuming trying to do something positive, but they're putting all of these young people at risk. And it's one thing if they said, we highly encourage and we're doing this, we're doing that, that wouldn't be so bad. But when you say mandate, that makes it almost like it's a fake law. That is to say, you know, with paying your $70,000 tuition, you still can't come unless you have this experimental mRNA or DNA intervention. The long-term effects, we don't know, and it's not FDA approved. And I'm not saying that the FDA process is perfect, but certainly it exists for a reason. And the fact that we have accelerated this over the past year to the point of a grand experiment, in my perception, in my thought process, it should be an experiment primarily for seniors, those in nursing homes, and those with multiple inflammatory conditions, not healthy, well people who either won't get COVID-19 or will have a minor cold. And then, Dr. McCullough, as you know, if you get any sort of a case of SARS-CoV-2 leading to COVID-19, even if minor, just the sniffles, you get three fabulous things with your immune system. You get antibodies, you get activated B cells and activated T cells. And when you're comparing natural immunity, which has multiple systems which overlap each other, versus a shot that basically is a general experiment and hasn't even completed the FDA process for another year, you don't get the same immunity. I mean, it's amazing to me that government has to question natural immunity that's been around for millions of years when this intervention is relatively new in the last decade or two. We've gotten together with other like-minded physicians, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons out of Tucson, Arizona, has taken some of the information and put together a letter that we're sending out to both public and private colleges immediately, like Rutgers, who started the phenomenon in New Jersey, Duke, Cornell, Yale, and other institutions of higher learning and high esteem, to try and educate them on the possible problems that could occur. I mean, we talked about the experimental nature of the intervention. We talked about car accidents and traumas being a much higher risk, but nobody says we should stop all 20-year-olds from driving. I mean, parents might in their head or in their heart or, you know, at a comedy routine, but it is what it is. I mean, that's something that hurts teens and 20s, not actually getting COVID, surprisingly enough. So we've got to fight the fear with education. So we want to make sure not only college women, but college men also, because we don't know what the long-term issues are with men either. I mean, we have had these interventions for all of 6 months, and it's impossible to tell long-term outcomes and side effects in just 6 months. And the biggest thing here, in my opinion, in addition to it being a waste of resources, picking the wrong population and mandating them get an experimental process, there's many big things here, but one of the biggest is informed consent. Can a young person of 18 years old make the decision to be part of this grand experiment? Do they know that they're not really a risk population for having a problem with COVID-19, you know? And I would argue that they don't. Not that they don't have the right to make informed consent, but I don't think anybody's offering it. When you go to sign up for one of these shots, you know, you wind up signing off on a form like you do your credit card or whatever every year. Nobody reads it, or a software, EULA, I think they call it, a licensing arrangement. You don't even know. And if you decide to read it, basically, they say, this is an experiment. It's not FDA approved to do anything. We don't know what the side effects are, and the companies aren't responsible. Here, sign here. You can have it now. It doesn't say that the potential benefits might be to minimize risk. However, the downsides of the potential of menstrual irregularities, fetal loss, sickness, loss of work, loss of school, and potentially death, it doesn't even get mentioned. So how can you have informed consent? So to me, it's just the wrong idea, the wrong time, and the wrong population. And I don't think anyone should be forced to get an experimental intervention of any age.
Well, I think that's a clear interpretation that your view is that the population risks outweigh any benefits. And at the time of the recording, I want the readers to clearly understand that the U.S. mass vaccination program is purely elective. It is offered by the CDC and FDA, that there's a variety of products. The consent indicates that they're investigational. They're not FDA approved. The benefits and the risks are unknown for these products, but they're offered to the population. And that there are 80 universities now that have indicated that they're going to mandate this elective program offered by the U.S. government without a favorable risk to benefit analysis. And at the time of this recording, there have been 3,186 deaths reported to the Centers for Disease Control by concerned healthcare workers that believe that the vaccine could have played a role in those deaths. Additionally, there's over 30,000 hospitalizations, ER visits, and urgent care visits. And the principle of autonomy, meaning that an individual controls what goes into his or her body. They can receive advice, but they can't be pressured, they can't be coerced, and they can't have the threat of reprisal imposed upon them. That's a violation of medical ethics. Our college-age students now are facing this real time. So Dr. Wax, what can parents do right now, as well as concerned students?
Parents and concerned students can let the colleges know their concerns. That's the most important thing they can do, because, you know, most of us have already written checks and taken out loans and have all these processes in place. And now for the college to say that the young people, the young adults, won't have the opportunity to take advantage of something that's been bought and paid for unless they take an experimental intervention for something that they're not really at risk for, it's unfathomable. So I think it's important to put it in writing and put it to the student affairs office. AAPS is writing their letter to the presidents and deans of all the colleges and asking for a timely response, because we need to call them on the carpet about this, because although it may be well-intentioned, it violates medical ethics, it violates a person's right to choose, and it's coercion. It literally says, do this or you can't do the school that you've earned your way into and paid for. It's literally, it violates all of the precepts that we think of severalfold.
Dr. Wax, you have any final words for our audience?
Yes, it's very, very important to be educated on these matters and to make personal individual decisions. Blanket decisions for populations. People are not populations. I mean, you may fit into a certain population of an age or a type or a walk or a talk. However, every individual is unique, and informed consent is hugely important. You must understand the potential benefits. You must understand the potential risks. You must understand the costs, and you must know what is known about that product or service. And you should have an idea of what is not known. And in this case, so much more is not known than is known, which catapults the risk, especially in a low risk population like college students. So I would recommend that all college students think long and hard before you consider this intervention, because it's lifelong. Once you take something into your body that goes for anything, that it can change your body forever. And parents, don't feel helpless. Don't feel tied up. Don't feel mute. Talk to your students about it and get active with the schools. Let them know what your concerns are, and let them know if you don't want it, that you refuse to have it, because it is your right to refuse an intervention, especially a potential experimental medical one.
Well, I'll let that be the last word. Folks, you've heard it yourself from one of the top physicians on the East Coast of the United States, Dr. Craig Wax, who's done a very careful analysis of this development. Dr. Wax, thank you for joining us on the McCullough Report.
It's indeed a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity and for doing such a great job, not only with this topic, but with all topics with the community at large. Thank you, Dr. McCullough.
Well, let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You're listening to the McCullough Report. Pleasure today to invite on the program a very renowned and famous physician in American medicine who really will go down in history as one of the most influential doctors in the whole entire field of psychiatry, Dr. Peter Breggin. Dr. Breggin went to undergraduate at Harvard University, attended medical school at Case Western University, returned to Harvard for his residency, both at Harvard and at New York Upstate Medical Center. And he is a practicing psychiatrist and has really devoted his professional efforts since the onset of the SARS-CoV-2 outbreak, COVID-19 pandemic, towards the pandemic, and has generated what many experts believe will be the major book that tells the story of what really happened to the world with respect to this pandemic and all of its social, cultural, biomedical, and worldwide implications. Dr. Breggin, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. You are one of my heroes. I admire your work so deeply, and it's so wonderful now to be working in a field where there are some people who know much more than I do. Because when I was working in psychiatry, my profession has been ossified. You know, it's excluded the human spirit. It's excluded family life. It's excluded religion. And it's trying to convince us that all the problems of humanity are your biochemicals, because then they can get all this money from the drug companies and everybody can grow wealthy. And you asking me before, how did I get into this? I was taking on much of the establishment that created COVID-19, but I didn't realize it in the beginning because I was going up against the pharmaceutical industry for decades, so much so that I experienced in the 1990s what many people are now experiencing only for the first time. I was kind of canceled because I was having such a big effect. I was on 2020 and I was on 60 Minutes. I was on everything. Oprah 6 times, Larry King 6 times. And I was taking on this industry in part because I had been selected by a federal court and a consortium of attorneys to take on Prozac and Eli Lilly within 2 or 3 years after it came on the scene. And it was just so popular and so widely used. And I became a world-class expert on the manufacture of the drugs, the development of the drugs, the way the companies work. And I was shocked. I had no idea there was so much fraud being perpetrated by corporate America. I wanted to believe in capitalism. I still do. I don't think we have capitalism anymore. I think we have predatory capitalism. We don't have free market capitalism. We have take advantage of you capitalism. So that prepared us to look at COVID-19. Soon as I heard Fauci talking about his relationships with all the drug companies, I knew, Ginger, I knew what that meant. I'd written many medical books about it, many scientific articles about it. So I really knew how to research that area. But we were afraid. We thought, oh, wait, people call me the conscious psychiatry. They will so go after me if I expand to the vaccine people. I know how nasty they are. They're as nasty as the psychiatrists. I thought, no, they're worse. I thought they'd be as nasty. They're worse. And I, it was just daunting. But then we found out, and this led to the book. Two things led to the book. One, we found out that in 2015, the NIH was funding research making coronavirus pathogens out of normal, happy viruses in bats that were bothering nobody, and that they were doing it with the Chinese. So we got that word up to Trump, And in 2 days, Trump canceled the funding of the Chinese working with us, making what are essentially weapons. And we believe that's been reinstated. It's unclear, but it's probably been reinstated under the new president. When we've just finished the book now, it isn't available, but I got really worried that I didn't want people to wait to July. We wanted to make an advanced, you know, good deal for people, but it didn't make sense under God to make people wait till July. So we now have an offer that thousands of people have now taken already and purchased. You purchase the book in advance and you get instantly into your mailbox the very latest version of the manuscript. We even have people sending in copy editing mistakes, you know, to us from it. So it's not a fully complete manuscript, but it's got 800 references in it. It's got all the major development, all the chapters are in it. So, and people can get that. Well, first, the title of the book is COVID-19 and the Global Predators. It is, as you said, I think, the only book that goes not only through all the science, where you have been so helpful to me. And by the way, folks, Dr. McCullough wrote an embarrassingly wonderful introduction to the book. And so has Zev Zelenko. And so has the marvelous Elizabeth Lievelied, all MDs, all frontline docs. All three of them wrote introductions, and all three of them are my teachers because, you know, they've been doing more real medicine for decades than I have. And now they're treating physicians. I still see psych patients. I don't try to treat COVID-19. So it's got all the science they've taught me and it put together in a way that pleases them. But I also go on to this Global Predators issue. And the book tells you who's behind it. They tell you the names, the individuals, their relationships, the corporations, their conferences. And then the most horrible thing of all, it shows you how they're all connected. And I never believed this would happen. They're all connected, earning a living with communist China. And that's why they are taking many of the positions they're taking, knowing that COVID-19 is weakening America. So if you've been confused, that's why America's being weakened and not fully treated. It's because the globalists are allied, not with America, but with communist China.
And I think the book will go a long way to helping America and really everybody in the world understand about why something that basically is a version of a common cold and that has some severe consequences in some susceptible people. Why did this SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19 pandemic basically shut down the world? Now, I'm looking at the book right now. The title is COVID-19 and the Global Predators, important subtitle, We Are the Prey, with introductions by myself, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Elizabeth Lievelied, and Dr. Vladimir Zev Zelenko. Dr. Zelenko is the very first doctor who attempted to treat COVID-19 face-to-face in his population in New York City. The principal author is Dr. Peter R. Bregan, MD, and his wonderful wife, Ginger Ross Bregan. And Dr. Bregan is the best-selling authors. Actually, the Bregans as a team are the best-selling authors of Talking Back to Prozac. This is going to be a blockbuster. It is so contemporary. And I think that's the thing that is so remarkable is normally books like this come out years afterwards. These books,
I've been working hard. So is Ginger. And so have you. So have everybody who's helped. So I didn't say how people get it. You get it at wearethepray.com, www.wearethepray.com. You'll get online to get the copies as soon as they come out, and you'll instantly get the latest version of the manuscript.
Dr. Bregan, thank you so much for coming on the McCullough Report to give us this wonderful trailer, if you will, to your upcoming book, Let's Get Real, Let's Get Loud, on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This has been listening to the McCullough Report.